So the main issue with hypertension is that people, they can go hypertensive for years. You can be for 2 decades, 20 years being highly hypertensive without feeling anything at all.
Hello, welcome to episode 46 of the MedTech Podcast. You join me, your host, Karandeep Singh Badwal, and in this episode, I have Joseph Sola, founder and CTO of Actia, a company specializing in blood pressure monitoring technology. In this episode, Joseph discusses how hypertension can remain undiagnosed for years, potentially decades, and why this is the case, how unlike some other diseases that can just be treated once and forgotten about, this is one that you have to monitor for the rest of your life, the somewhat lack of regulatory hurdles he faced bringing his product to market compared to other types of devices, and what he learned from over 15 years' research on the disease. Welcome to the show, Joseph. How are you today?
I'm doing very fine. What about yourself?
I'm doing very well. So on the topic of hypertension, being that it's such a well-known risk factor for several health conditions, it's reported that over 50% of people with high blood pressure often remain undiagnosed. Why would you think this is the case, and what can be done to perhaps improve hypertension awareness?
Yeah, look, so the main issue with hypertension is that people, they can go hypertensive for years. You can be for 2 decades, 20 years being highly hypertensive without feeling anything at all. Know that you are ill. So that's the main issue. It's an extremely dangerous long-term chronic disease, but it has no real symptoms. And this makes it very complicated for the general population to be aware.
So at what point do usually people start to become aware of hypertension? Is it at the point where it's often at the late stages where perhaps something can't be done, or is it often just that perhaps a routine checkup with a GP?
Yeah, in most evolved countries, it's a normal routine GP visit that will spot the hypertensive status coming, but that's normally too late. So it's like smoking cigarettes. It doesn't matter if you smoke a cigarette once. If you have been smoking every day for the last 2 years or the last 5 years, the damage that you are creating will be there. So if you're lucky and the GP really catches that hypertension on you the day you visit his office, you may have been already hypertensive for the last 3 years, and the damage is done. And the worst case is that even if you go to the GP office that day, it could very well be that day you are not hypertensive. So hypertension is something that is changing continuously. So you need to be taken care of the day where it could be detected. And if it's not, you could go for the next 4 or 5 years without any diagnosis, and you go on accumulating risk on your body.
So as someone who's dedicated to over 15 years researching hypertension, what would you say are some of the key insights or findings that you've come across that perhaps are not so much common knowledge?
As I said, hypertension is a chronic disease. So it's not something that you are only diagnosed once and everything is fine. It's a disease that once you are diagnosed, from that day and for the rest of your life, you will need to be taken care of. So what we learn, or what I learned on the research over the last almost 20 years now, is that the technology or the solution that will make a difference on how hypertension will be managed will be the technology that managed to get patients to be using it day by day. So ways to measure blood pressure, they exist now since 3 decades, since the 70s. You can go and buy a device that you have at home and will measure blood pressure. It's this cuff inflating around the arm. So the technology was there. The problem is that patients and general population, they don't want to use it, and they will not use it every day. They will not use it every week. They will not even use it every month. So the key point is, how can we put on the hands or the wrist or on the body of the people a system or a technology or product that will engage them to keep using? And that's the only element that will start the process in which that patient will take care of his or her condition and will make it better.
So following on from your research, at what point did you decide to found Actia? And what sort of hurdles did you come along in the early days?
Yeah, so when we started this research, that was on the early 2000s. that was at the very, very beginning of the first optical monitors on the wrist. So today there are thousands of different versions of heart rate monitors that you can wear on the wrist, all the wearable devices they do that. By then there was nothing. So that was the moment where the first LEDs, so the first very small lights, started to be present, and you could buy them at low cost. And by then, we started working in the Swiss Institute of Research on ways to use those sensors to measure cardiovascular parameters. One of those was heart rate, and this was solved very easily. Then we moved into how much oxygen in your blood you have. And my particular topic of interest was hypertension. So in my family, I have several members who are hypertensive. So I wanted to focus the research on, could we use those signals on the wrist using only optical sensors to extract information about blood pressure. So that went on. We started with computer simulations, then we went to animal experiments, then we started with patients in the operating rooms, then we went to the intensive care units, then we started with volunteers, and this went on. And slowly we created the knowledge on how to use those very, very, very noisy signals to extract this blood pressure. That was around the 2015. By then, the solution was there. So we knew that there was a technology ready that could measure this blood pressure easily without having to inflate a cuff every time that the measurement had to be performed. But we were still in a research institute, and the goal of that institution was not to make a product out of that. So we started looking for partners that wanted to take that technology and make it a product out of that. But that really didn't work. So we didn't find anyone who really understood what was the potential of finally having a product that could be used by these patients for 20 years to track and to manage the hypertension. And that was the moment where we decided, okay, so the technology is there, we master, we know how it works. So let's take it. Let's take it off from that research institute, and let's make a company, which is Actia today, who is exploiting that technology as a product commercially. So that's how everything started. So really moving from, we did the research, the homework is done. Now let's find the best way to put this on the hand of the people.
So did you face any regulatory challenges when you were trying to bring this product to the market, or would you say that was not much of an issue?
No, so thanks God there were regulatory hassles. So to measure blood pressure is not like doing a weather forecast. So there is a lot of impact on the data that you will provide to a patient or to a user. So there is a very strong control in each country of the world on what kind of devices they go into market which measure blood pressure. So each country has its own regulatory bodies that control that thing. And what we had to do as a company first is how to organize the product development and the commercialization of the product so that it could comply with the regulatory laws of each of those countries. So I wouldn't say that regulatory has been an issue for Actia. It's a simple control that needs to go through any company that wants to go into market. And this ensures that what patients will be given makes sense. It's just not giving crappy data because they could be taking decisions on that data that could be harmful for them.
So the question I have, and the question that you probably had before you formed this company, is the traditional cuff-based blood pressure monitoring systems that we had, why did no one ever challenge this system, you know, considering that they've been around for decades?
I think I would phrase the question differently. It's not that no one challenged that. It's that no one had came up with a solution that could challenge that. So the need for a different way to measure blood pressure, it's obvious. It has been out there for decades. But when you want to measure pressure, the first thing that comes into your mind is that you want to do some pressure on the body. So everyone has been focusing on using devices that are pressing around the body, normally around the arm or around the wrist. The next step of solving the same problem with a technology technology that is not pressing, it's not an easy one. At least it's not a straightforward one. So the challenge was there. The problem was to come up with a solution that could be accurate enough to be used in real life. So I would summarize saying that the need was there, the challenge was there, what was missing was the technology part that could solve it. And that was the work we did. So we just didn't came up one day saying, look, we're going to have a solution. We indeed spent these 15 years doing the research until the solution was there. And that's what makes the big difference between CAF-based traditional methods to what we call now the CAF-less methods.
So in terms of when you released this product onto the market, what was the initial response from physicians? You know, were they a little bit skeptical that perhaps, you know, can this technology really replace the traditional systems? Or would you find that they were very welcoming towards it?
Look, I think there are two ways of people in general reacting to that. So first of all, patients. And those are those that are wearing the device and understand how difficult it is to comply with measuring your blood pressure with a cuff every day. Those, so the patients, they just took the solution and the device as their device. So we have a very good commercial success with our device. On the provider side, there are two buckets. There are two groups of physicians. There are those that learn by the book when they went to med school, and they learn that blood pressure needs to be measured with a cuff. And there are those that understand that what they want to have is more data from their patients. For these last ones, they adopted, and they are adopting the device and the technology very, very quickly. For those that they were once told that measure blood pressure can only be done with a cuff, it takes more time. What's happening today, and that's what we are seeing, is that patients, they are adopting it. So the next time they go to visit the GP, which is in 1 year from now, they don't go anymore with a piece of paper with some numbers written of them once every 3 weeks. They go to the GP with our app and the reports that we generate with our products, saying, look, these are the 30 measurements per day I did over the last 1 year. And that's where the GPs are like, wow. So this adoption of slower adopters is coming spontaneously on our side because of the patients themselves, they are adopting the device. It will take time. As usual for any new technology, there are some refractors that will take more time, but it's just coming.
So what motivates you as a scientist to have dedicated over a decade into this space? You know, I'm sure there were times where maybe you had doubted yourself or maybe thought about, you know, should I keep this going? Should I perhaps not? What is it exactly that keeps you motivated?
I think there is one single motivation, which is the most important one, is that hypertension is killing tens of thousands of people every day across the world. And we know that there are better ways of managing that. What has been keeping me motivated to go on is that if we manage, and that's what we are doing, we're managing the thing, if we manage the impact of each and any of the hours that myself and all the team around this idea have been working, the outcome of that work will be saving tens of millions of lives per day. And I think that's a pretty good motivation. And again, the problem is so big, and the existing solutions are so, sorry for that, bad, that anything that we can do will improve the situation. So it's very easy to keep motivated there.
So on the flip side of that then, how can continuous monitoring be improved to help people that perhaps don't necessarily have hypertension? Are there perhaps other uses for this metric? Or would you say it's a case of it benefits those people in the sense that it can perhaps provide early detection?
For those that are hypertensive, it's not so much the continuous measurement that makes sense. It's not that you need to measure every minute of your day. You need to have several measurements per day just to understand whether the exercise that you did the day before really had an impact, that the less salt you eat over the last 1 week had an impact. For those people, it's not really the continuous on a kind of beat-to-beat or every second measurement that makes sense. Now, on those that are not hypertensive, for them, blood pressure is not a real issue. Yet. what will happen as anyone gets older is that this hypertension will start appearing. And as any chronic condition, the earlier that you take it and the earlier you start managing it, the better the outcome will be. So apart from the hundreds of millions of patients around the world that need the continuous several measurements per day BP monitoring, there is the awareness part of it, which is extremely important for all the rest. So where we position our technology is not only on let's try to do the best so the patients keep being engaged to control their blood pressure, is let's also try to make aware those that are not yet aware that hypertension is starting to come. And by doing this early prevention and early detection of the hypertension, that's where you achieve the best outcomes 20 years later. So that's it. Then there are also some patients which are what we call hypotensive, so their blood pressure is too low. It's not a lot of patients, but it's also some of them. They also take a benefit of our product. But the big two clusters are those that are diagnosed and they are being treated. They need this technology on a day-to-day basis. And there are those that never had access to a BP monitoring facility because they are still normotensive. Those will be able to detect them early enough so that we can catch and start the treatment earlier.
So what other products are you working on at Actea? Of course, you've got your blood pressure monitoring device. Are there perhaps other devices that you're looking to work on, or perhaps add additional features to your existing portfolio?
I think it has been kind of the red line of discussion. Hypertension is a very, very big issue. And what we decided with Matthias, so the co-founder of the company, and myself, is that we wanted to create and to deploy the tool that supports this management of hypertension. So what we solved during the first research time and what we solve now with the first version of the product is mainly the blood pressure measuring product. So we have a device that's being worn by patients that measures blood pressure. Cool, this is done. The next step is how we provide this data to the patients. Of course, we can do as we do today. We just provide them the numbers, and they see this graphically, they see some summaries, that's fine. But the way we can now leverage this data to engage those patients on a day-to-day basis, to keep making their treatment, to keep changing their lifestyle way, that's what have the largest impact at the end. So where the company now is focusing, and most of the team is working now on the development, is of course making the measurement part of the product every time better, but building on top of that all the engagement tools that will close the loop so that each and any of the users, they are more engaged on their cardiovascular health. So at the end of the day, what we want to make possible is that the control of hypertension, it's a simply cool thing to do by using Actea instead of a very heavy and difficult to implement intervention because your GP told you once. So the next level of the Actea product is not so much a change on how the bracelet is looking like, it's not so much how much the optical sensors are working, which are being evolved every day, but the big next breakthrough is enabling this long-term engagement of the users so that the chronic condition of hypertension is really managed on the right way.
So following on from that, would you say perhaps there are other uses for this type of technology that you have outside of hypertension, or would you say it's strictly for hypertension only?
Let's go one step into the technology. What we are actually doing, so we want to measure blood pressure. Normal standard legacy technologies, they press a cuff around your wrist, around your arm, and they measure the pressure at which the cuff is pressing your body. On our side, the technology works in an optical space. So we are not pressing across the body, we're simply injecting small amounts of light into your skin. That light will go into your arteries, part of it will go out from the skin, and we are capturing that part. So every time that your heart is beating, each of your arteries will also change the diameter, and we will see a change of that light. So we inject light and we measure a sensor, a signal whose wave is changing according to your heartbeats. This can be used for a lot of things. As I said, it can be used for heart rate variability, oxygen in your blood, blood pressure. What we want to evolve this further is how well we can assess cardiovascular risk. So today, we are measuring only blood pressure as a number. So there are the two numbers, systolic and diastolic blood pressure. But we can do much more on that. So each of us has a very specific signature of cardiovascular signals. So when you look at how your heart is beating against the arteries, how your arteries are changing the diameter, this really depends on you. And that signature will explain how you are in terms of cardiovascular risk. So if you look at the signal of a baby, a newborn, it will be a very smooth, very nice signal. If you go and look at the signal of someone who is older, let's say it's on the 70s, on the 80s, and who has been hypertensive for the last 30 years, will have very stiff arteries. The signals will be completely different. So in all the spectrum of how different our bodies are, there is a signature on the optical signals that we can get from our sensors. So what we are doing, what we are evolving, now we have almost 100 million data points. So 100 million recordings performed over the users using the Actia device day by day. We are actually using those signals to evolve how can we use the use of the device to predict cardiovascular outcomes. So at the end, it goes to the same goal, is that we want to provide to each and any of our users the best way to engage them with an indication on how good they are doing and how much they have been improving since the last time they changed something, which can be lifestyle, which can be change in diet, which can be a change in medication. So this sensing part, these optical signals coming from the arteries, they just have, it's like an encyclopedia of your body. They have everything about your cardiovascular health, and today we are only using about 20% of its potential.
Brilliant. So on the topic of ideas, of course, when you have an idea and you want to protect it, you have to go through a patent, and I'm aware that you've invented over 14 different patents. So for the listeners today who maybe have an idea and want to protect it, number one, at what point should they start thinking about protecting the idea? And number two, what does the patent process actually look like?
When you come up with an idea, we just go through the process. So when you start with a new idea, I think my recommendation, first one, is go and talk to everyone, at least to your friends or those that are working with you. Just share it. In most of the cases, it's not new or it just doesn't matter at all. It's not a good idea. Once you pass that process, and your more close network agrees that's a good idea, then you need to test it and you will need to start implementing it and to really evaluate if it's that good. If that's the case, then you need to ask you a question. Is this idea worth being protected in a patent? Which means that if you're gonna protect that idea, you will need to write what is called a patent application, which will disclose most of the idea. So if what you just came with is very cool, but by describing it, anyone can simply reproduce it, and there is no way that you know that they are infringing your patent, so anyone can copy the idea and just implement it on their side, it doesn't make sense to patent it. If what you are gonna protect, so you're going to file this patent application. Once you have that patent published, because it will be published, if you can use it commercially, and at the same time, anyone who would be copying it, you can detect that that's been copied, there it makes sense. Let me give you an example. You could come up, for Actia, for instance, you can come up with an excellent new design of the optical sensor. There is a way to make it easier for the light to go into the skin, to go out from the skin, get better signals. That's cool. this will reduce the amount of battery life that you need, this will increase the amount of time that you can use the device without charging, you will get better signals, and if you patent that, and anyone is going to copy your idea, you can see that, and you can go against them. So in this case, it makes sense to patent. On the other side, if you come up with a smarter way to look at the signals, to process those signals, to extract new information, this goes into the algorithm side of the wall. That part of ideas, if you want to patent it, you need to disclose how this works. And if anyone is going to copy that on a software program running in another system, you will not be able to detect that. So if that's the case, you better keep these ideas as what's called trade secrets. So it's in Actia case, it's the algorithms that we have, they are running in a cloud, in a protected cloud, so that no one can go and reproduce our algorithms on their site. On this case, a patent might not be the best idea.
Perfect. I like the distinction there between trade secrets and patents. You often see these terms thrown around. You know, patents are obviously clear, but I like the fact that you talk about as trade secrets and why perhaps somebody shouldn't do that, because I'm guessing it'd be quite easy to go out there and maybe file 100 patents where you probably don't even need to.
Correct. And when you start filing a patent, apart from the fact that you will spend a lot of tens of hours writing that patent, then you need to file it, in which you need to invest cash on it. Then it will go, depending on how many countries you want to spread that patent, you need to pay for the entry in each of those countries. And then you will need also to invest more money into defending those patents in each of the countries. So the patenting, the IP process of filing patents is very expensive, in particular for small companies or individuals. So you should better think very carefully if it makes sense or not. If it's the case, of course you need to do it. And this is also giving more value to your business. But if there is not a clear positive outcome, beneficial outcome of that patent being filed, when you compare it to the amount of cash that you need to invest it, you may decide that it's better not to file that patent.
Outside of the topic of work, I'm aware that you are currently a tour guide for the Alps. What else do you get up to outside of work?
I was born in Barcelona, and I did all my studies on that region. When I later moved to Switzerland, that was in 2004, my goal was to do both. So I wanted to invest more time in doing research, and this kind of cardiovascular research we have been discussing so far, and I wanted to invest more time climbing. So I ended up being at the same time doing my PhD thesis on non-invasive continuous blood pressure monitoring and preparing my mountain guiding exams. So they seem to be extremely orthogonal domains, so climbing and skiing and being there in the Alps or the Himalayas and doing research. But at the end, when you think about the processes that are running on our brains when doing both things, they are very similar. So on the research and creation of a startup world, what we mainly do every day is to handle risks. So we need to manage risk. We need to take decisions. We need to look at what's the consequence of each risk that we are taking and what's the likelihood of that event to happen, which is exactly the same that as mountain guides we do every day. So when we go downhill skiing, early skiing, or off-piste skiing, we have at every minute of our day to reevaluate what are the risks and the consequences of every movement that we are doing with our clients. So for me, both domains evolve in the same direction, is how to optimize the risk-taking process so that the outcome is the best without putting at risk everything.
Brilliant. So Joseph, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. What one piece of advice would you be leaving the listeners with?
One piece of advice, in particular for young listeners, is that whenever you're starting to work on a problem, try to think if that problem is big. if the problem is big and solving it will have impact on real people and a lot of people, go for it. If you want to start working on a small problem and that problem, yeah, it will solve some things. It's worth doing it, but you will very easily lose the motivation to continue to work on it. So, in particular for researchers on the very early stages of their career, try to target the biggest problem that you can. It will look like impossible. It will look like crazy. But you have your lifespan for doing that. If you start from the beginning on that big, big problem, the chances, if you keep pushing on that, the chances that at some point you will manage to leverage part of it and you will manage to solve part of it are very high. And since that's a big problem, the outcome or the impact that you will have with your work will be huge. So I think the summary is the bigger the problem you want to solve, the bigger the motivation you will have to work day by day trying to solve it.
Completely agree with you on that. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to episode 46 of the MedTech Podcast. If you have not already done so, please subscribe. If you wish to learn more about Jeff Eakin on LinkedIn or visit his company website, the links of which are provided in the description. If there are any particular topics or guests you would like for me to have on the show in future, then feel free to reach out.